So hello, everybody. Thank you very much for the introduction. And I love that you you put in there that you're a dentist, and I love that. That's great. So yes, I am the money lady, but my first name is Christine, and you can just call me Chris. So it is great to be joining your group, and thank you for letting me come. I know that most of you are now retired and hopefully enjoying not working. Retirement is, well, it's the final end game, right? This is when you get to enjoy yourself without the commitments, meetings, deadlines, and the drudgery of commuting. And most of the time when I present across Canada, I talk about how to retire debt-free and wealthy, but you're already retired. So today, we are going to talk about a few things that are more specific to you. First, we're going to look at how some successful retirees have invested and essentially how they have protected their portfolios in volatile markets. So I want to show you what products are available at your bank other than just the basic mutual funds, ETFs, and GICs. Some of you may still have debt or a small mortgage, so I'm also going to show you how to pay it off faster and why you may want to perhaps switch out of a typical mortgage format. I'm also going to give you a few estate planning tricks to protect your money. And for those of you who would like to be remembered long after you have passed away, I'm also going to show you how you can create your own legacy for your grandchildren. Now, also, throughout this presentation, I'm going to make reference to two different research studies that were released in 2020. Now, I know it's before COVID. One is from StatsCan, and the other is by an independent Canadian study group. The StatsCan survey was designed to determine the reasons why some retirees are happier than others. The other study will show the correlation between your well-being and your money. When you think about it, you know, why aren't all retired people happy? To those people that are still working, like myself, we can't even imagine why you wouldn't be happy all the time. But it does turn out that there are some retired Canadians that are indeed happier than others, and we're going to find out why. So let's get started. Now, I know that most of you have your own advisors, and you have actually, I'm just going to move this over here. You have saved through your working years and you're now retired. Many of you have your own way of doing things and your own hobbies, and I'm not here to tell you to change anything if it's working and you're happy. But there is always room for improvement. And why not know what other people are doing? Right? When we look at the financial aspects of the happiest retirees, it was not that they had more money, but more that they viewed their money as a tool for their happiness. And there really is some unique differences between the happiest retirees and the ones that rated themselves in the StatCan survey as kind of less happy most of the time. The happier retirees had no mortgage. They also had no consumer debt. They stayed in their homes that they had purchased and paid off while they were working. And there's a lot of, you know, when you think about it, there's a lot of retirees that move during their early years of retirement to kind of right size their life, right? However, many take on home renovations or they make big purchase decisions and wind up with more debt than they probably bargained for, which then forces them to eat into their retirement savings or carry a mortgage that they maybe didn't anticipate. Now, I'm going to be a little bit brash here, but honestly, I personally believe that the vast majority of Canadians today are still being hustled with the same low-performing and mediocre products that we have always provided at the retail level for years. Although you may feel somewhat satisfied, there's got to be some of you out there that are wondering, you know, is this all there is? Are my banks, or is my bank only interested in providing mortgages, lines of credit, mutual funds, and GICs? Is my advisor really, really helping me, or are they just wanting more investments to add to their books? There are other products to choose from when you go into your bank. There are investment products that have downside market protection, and there are products that pay off your debt faster than a standard mortgage format. You just have to know what to ask for. And your goal should always be to choose products that will provide inflation-adjusted income and always deliver returns above inflation. So that's not your bank GIC, and it's not going to be your bank fixed rate mortgage. And I don't mean to ruffle any financial feathers here, like if there's anybody who's worked at banks before, but I no longer sell or push products or services for any bank for their benefit. So now I just kind of tell you exactly how it is. Okay. So most people today are invested in the market in some way or another, right? And with or without an advisor. An experienced investor understands the risk and return trade-off of the market and are more comfortable with market volatility. These investors, which are usually men, are constantly looking for opportunities to profit over long time horizons, which is perfect. That's great. It is true that one must accept a higher degree of risk to earn a higher return, but not all investors can afford future losses, especially when you're in retirement. Our ability to bear risk has a tendency to decrease as we age. And often those investors who believe they have a high tolerance for market risk suddenly change their mind when the market turns against them. If we go back to that Canadian StatsCan survey that compares those happy retirees to those that are not so happy, another thing that I found really interesting was that the happiest retirees had done a lot of planning over the years. They obviously were not leaving anything up to chance, and most had financial advisors to help them. And all of them had multiple sources of income in retirement. So what I mean is they had many sources other than pensions. So 3 to 5 sources funding their retirement. When you look at the unhappy participants of the survey, as you would expect, they had done little to no planning for their future during their working years. and many plan to rely on only one or two sources of income, such as their OAS and CPP. And they typically invested without financial assistance, and they did a lot of day trading on their own, which often can have, and I've seen it many times with people who send me emails from my columns, catastrophic repercussions. You see, when you're retired, well, you know, you have lots of time, right, on your hands. And because of poor planning, you want to invest in riskier investments, and the market has a way of creating greed. And you could set yourself up for a big fall. To give you an example with this slide, if the market were to drop by 50%, if your investments were $10,000 and the market dropped by 50%, you now need it to go up 100% just to break even, which is not going to happen quickly, not as quick as it drops. If you are not a knowledgeable investor and you are relying solely on the decisions of your advisor, it goes without saying that you should make sure that you have communicated your risk tolerance and you're invested correctly. Often clients, they fill out these risk questionnaires with their advisors the way they would like to behave when faced with risk, while how they really behave may be completely different. So to give you an example, if you are moderately risk averse, you would not want to be invested in precious metals or any sort of ETF precious metals funds, since they potentially have high volatility. Now, I'm going to just pause here and give you an estate planning tip. For those of you who may have RIFs and you have had to take out funds recently during volatile market conditions due to COVID, you actually do not have to cash in your investments in your RIF if you're being told by your advisor to take the minimum withdrawal from your RIF. You can actually do an in-kind withdrawal instead. So what it is you're moving it from a registered account to a non-registered account. So you're not really withdrawing it. You're doing an in-kind transfer. So instead of selling the stock and withdrawing the cash, you still have to pay the tax on the market value of the securities that you're essentially kind of withdrawing. However, you don't have to sell them at an unrecoverable loss at that time. When the value of the securities eventually recovers, you can then cash them out. And if there is any increased growth, it will be treated as a capital gain outside of your RIF and taxed at half the rate normally applied to any RIF withdrawal. Okay, so now let's talk about some tips for investing. I want you to know what our high net worth clients invest in and why. And I'm going to show you something that is completely different. And it is what's called, it is institutional investing. This is a very different investment approach that many of you may not have seen in the past, but it has been the investment choice of the ultra rich for the last 40, 50 years. And it is called an SMA, so strategic managed accounts, which are institutional. For decades, they really have only been available to clients who could invest over $1 million or for institutional investors. So you're saying, okay, Chris, why are you telling me this? I don't care. But you do care because in the last 4 years, they have lowered the entry thresholds and now made them available to the average investor. So to get into an institutional strategy in the past, you might have needed $500,000 to get into one strategy. Now you may only need $75,000 to get in. And they really, really should be part of your portfolio. It's not that high net worth clients are smarter than the average investor. It's more that they have been given more opportunities, more advice, and a lot more attention. So what is an SMA? An SMA mirrors a large institutional strategy that has an absolute return philosophy, downside market protection, and capital preservation. Institutional solutions are designed to maximize growth year over year, and they've been used for decades with large investors, pension funds, research funds, hospital foundation funds. If you get a corporate pension from OMERS, so if you work for the government or you're a teacher or whatever, and you get your pension from OMERS, that's in an SMA. If you work from the hospital or worked for, with the hospital and you get your pension from HOOP, that's in an SMA. So today, a smaller investor can now mirror their portfolio to match an institutional strategy, ensuring that they also have access to an institutional money manager's segregated portfolio, ones that are ranked as high performers and ensure that they have downside market protection because the actual fund is hedged. You should want to have, well, you always want to have security in your investments, and you want ones that provide good compounded returns and market protection. Most people think that they can, you know, they can handle the ups and downs of the market. The reality is that ETFs and mutual funds are extremely vulnerable to the market. But stats show that we all tend to hold on to losing positions far too long in a hope of, you know, getting our money back. And it's not just the investor, it's also the advisor, hanging on in the hopes of avoiding errors or suffering losses, which is not good. This is why we say, you know, that term that's coined, the rich get richer. They use SMAs to protect their capital and protect their portfolio from market declines. SMAs are actually what's called a collared investment. So they don't go sky high, but they don't also drop as deep as a mutual fund or an ETF. So they're very different. I'm going to actually just explain how this works. So when you're investing, there's two camps for capturing returns. One is upside capture, which is chasing a return, extremely volatile, very difficult. This is what day traders do. The other is downside protection, which personally I believe in the last 30 years of working with high net worth clients, this is the key to building wealth. You see, if we go back to that slide a couple back, if your portfolio goes down 50% today, you need it to go up 100% tomorrow to break even, which is not going to happen. It rarely happens. This forces people to stay in that losing position far too long. So when you talk to your advisor and you explain that to them, what do they say? You know, what do they say? Well, they say, you got to diversify. You got to have a lot more mutual funds, spread out your risk, and, you know, we'll put you in some more ETFs. And they may not even deal with high net worth clients. They might not even know what an SMA is. So the fact is, though, You know, in the 2008 financial crisis, there was a lot of people that were diversified. It wasn't one sector that went down. They all went down. And I can guarantee you that when the coronavirus hit, we were all diversified. We're not a siloed economy. We're a global economy. Something happens overseas, it hits us. So diversification, yes, is very, very important, but it's not everything. That's why I want you to consider an SMA, because an SMA comes with a floor value guarantee between 2 and 4%. So let's say average 3%. So it's got a guaranteed floor. It has a growth potential between 7 and 9%. So remember, it's the collared investment. Retirees, from my experience, are not looking for massive returns, but rather a steady, secured return year over year with a guaranteed base so that their portfolios lose as little capital as possible. You want to invest in portfolios that don't take on too much risk and ensure capital protection. And you want continuous compounded growth. And the way to do this is to access institutional investments. Now, everybody in retirement has a different financial circumstance. Some were great planners and they had more. Others have had personal hardships and they might have less. Everybody has suffered by the time you get into your late 50s or your 60s or older. The longer you get to live, the more you have to endure. It is easy for those who have money to say, if they wanted it bad enough, they would have found a way to improve their situation, right? I've seen it happen with my own clients. I've seen it happen personally with my own family, and I see it a lot with wealthy parents who say to their child, who might be a single parent themselves, who maybe has dropped out of something like night school that could have led to a better paying job or a more stable career or whatever, they just lack the drive to succeed. Or I've seen people who, you know, pass judgment on others, saying that, you know, they should have had more and they should have done better. And I'm here to tell you that that actually is not true. When you are preoccupied with money worries, no matter what your age, you cannot help but feel challenged in every way, every single day, whether you are working or whether you're retired. Now, this is the independent study that was done, that I want to bring this up, and I have added this to my presentations because I want you to understand how some people relate to money, and maybe you will see the similarities, and you will, you know, if you think about it, you will have family members or other people that you can think actually that kind of relate to this. And perhaps I want you to wear your heart on your sleeve a little bit more when you're dealing with family and other people. So this study compared the IQs of those who had money and those who did not. And the respondents were chosen because their IQ levels were exactly the same at the beginning of the test. However, when they were faced with a financial challenge about their future, let's say an expensive car repair, The ones that had the money to pay for the repair seemed to have a higher IQ with the balance of the testing. So the wealthier respondents didn't have kind of like a brain drain, because the answer to the question about how to pay for the car repair was relatively easy. They could put it on their line of credit. They had the money in their bank account. They could put it on their credit card because they had a large enough limit, whatever, right? This was not the same for the poorer respondents, because they were actually stuck on the financial question, since it was more difficult for them to know how to meet the personal challenge. And they therefore had less bandwidth for the balance of the IQ test. You see, when you are preoccupied by financial concerns, it makes you measurably less able to do the things that others can do, because they have no worries about their future and their day-to-day monetary commitments. Often, the reason people are stressed out about money is because they're kind of being squeezed by the amount coming in, contrasted by the amount that has to go out to live the life they desire to live. And if this is something, you know, this is actually something I see with a lot of single people in retirement. If you are in a situation where you anticipate financial scarcity in the future, you must make the changes now to improve your situation. When worry about money comes off your plate, you have the opportunity to be your best self. Your mind is kind of clear to think for yourself and to think for others. You must have a well thought out strategy that provides for the unexpected, and something that will help you pay for unexpected costs that might not be built into your budget. So, let's talk about how to create that. Have you ever heard of a collateral charge? Do you know what it is and how it works? So, a collateral charge, I believe, if you own your own home, absolutely everybody should have this product. It is a financial planning tool, and you should have it available for any unforeseen events that may happen in your future. So I'm going to tell you how it works. When we used to have high net worth clients come over, and they would be part of my practice, you know, we would have a lot of people that would have existing mortgages. We would take them out of a mortgage and put them into a collateral charge. And you're going to say, why would you do that? I'm going to tell you why. So, a collateral charge is a financial planning tool. It's secured against your primary residence for 100% of its current value. It has no term, no renewal, and it's fully open. It is extremely flexible. And honestly, for the right type of client, it's complete freedom. The reason I want you to consider it is twofold. If you have a mortgage, or you have a line of credit, or you have consumer debt, placing it in a collateral charge structure will immediately fast track and pay it off faster, since the interest is calculated different than any other loan format. It is a true pay for what you owe, calculating the interest on the outstanding balance each month. Now, all of you have had mortgages in the past, I'm sure you have. So, do you know how mortgages work in Canada? And you're all muted, so you can't say anything. So the only person I really know is John. So John, I think you're on here, but I'm just going to use your name as a guinea pig. And I know nothing about John, and but let's pretend that John has a mortgage for, I don't know, let's say $300,000. Now, again, I know nothing about John, but we're just using his name. Okay. So the way mortgages work in Canada is they calculate based on a calendar year, and they calculate semi-annually, not in advance. So it doesn't matter when John got his mortgage. It doesn't matter what month he took it out. It always runs to the next calculation. And you get your annual mortgage statement in January or February for the previous year because it runs on a calendar year. So at the bottom of your mortgage statement, you'll see it says calculated semi-annually, not in advance. Or if you have a mortgage from Scotiabank, it'll say calculated half-yearly, not in advance. Exactly the same thing. If you have a mortgage from a credit union, it's actually worse. It's calculated annually. So I'll explain to you how it works, but you're not going to want a mortgage that's calculated annually. So what we do with the banks is we open you up January 1st and we say, okay, how much does John owe? He owes $300,000. Awesome. Fabulous. All right, what's his payment selection? Weekly is the best, monthly is the worst, and we spread it out over 6 months. We recalculate June 30, and we preset again on July 1st and run to December 31. So that's how you get those 2 6-month blocks. Everything is front-loaded, preset, all set up, right? So let's say that John has $10,000 and he wants to put it down on his mortgage. Fabulous. Wonderful. Okay. So he puts $10,000 down on his mortgage. He walks into the bank and goes up to the teller and he puts 10 grand down as a prepayment to his mortgage in March. Wonderful. He will see the balance drop by $10,000. However, the interest is not going to change because it's already set up and preset. Yes, the balance drops by 10 grand, but it's not going to reevaluate the balance until it opens again, which is June 30. So this is how the banks, we have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of mortgages in Canada, and we get all our little pennies because everything's front-loaded. So what I used to do is we would give clients a collateral charge. A collateral charge is available at all 5 big banks, but they don't push it because it is not a money-making machine. Mortgages, regardless of the rate, are our biggest money-making machine. And we don't want to push a collateral charge at the retail level. The reason why I was pushing it was because I had high net worth clients and I want you to come over and be on my desk. So I'm going to show you how to save money, right? Because if I save you how to save money, then you're going to, it's reciprocity, right? You're going to come over and you're going to believe that I'm, you know, helping you out and you're going to give me your investments. So that's why I used to do it. So the other reason why I want you to consider this product is that there's no term, no renewal. So if you were to get it today, you could keep it for the next 20, 30, 40 years and never have to qualify again. Hence the reason we recommended it for estate planning, because it's also recognized by the CRA and it can be split into multiple segments. So I'm going to go back to John here, but let's say that John has a HELOC from TD, okay, Home Equity Line of Credit. A HELOC is like a teeter-totter. It has a mortgage and a line of credit. As you pay your mortgage down, the line of credit portion increases up to a maximum of 60% loan to value, because that is the federal government mandate for a revolving line of credit piece, right? That's not the same with a collateral charge. It doesn't just have two pieces. You can break it up into 10, 20 pieces. You can have multiple segments on a collateral charge. So hence the reason why high net worth clients would like it, because a lot of them are business owners. If you want to inject money into your business, if you wanted to buy a rental property, if you wanted to send your kids to private school, you wanted to help out somebody, whatever, you can now have separate segments all labeled with different titles, and they are not, so it's not amalgamated into your personal debt. Let's talk about that for a minute. Let's say you wanted to buy a rental property, and the federal government mandates that you must put down 20%. You can't go high ratio on an investment property. You must put down 20%. And okay, so you put down 20%. Let's say you buy a rental property for 500 grand. 20% is 100,000. Where's the 100,000 coming from? The 100,000 comes from you either refinancing your mortgage and putting the 100,000 in there, taking it on your personal line of credit, cashing in your investments, whatever, right? So you put a mortgage on the rental property, but you can only write off 80% loan to value, right? Because that's the rental. And all the expenses, the land transfer tax, all that stuff, you've had to be out of pocket. Hence the reason why we use a collateral charge. So a collateral charge, you can set up a segment for that 20% and the expenses. It's not amalgamated into your personal debt. This is why it's recognized by the CRA. And you now can use that as a tax write-off. So you're writing off 100% of the investment, right? You're writing off 100%. 80% on the rental property and 20% in your collateral charge. If you don't have access to credit, the alternative could be that you have to go to the bank and apply for a loan at a time when it is difficult to apply or to qualify. Since 2008, since the financial crisis, and a lot of people don't believe me, but honestly, I've been in the industry for a long, long time, and I was in the industry in 2008. Literally, every single year, the government has mandated through OSFI, that controls and mandates and mitigates the banks, they have mandated lending changes almost every single year on the banks. And what you qualified for 5 years ago is not going to be the same as what you can qualify for today. Your collateral charge never changes, nor does it expire. You could keep it for years and have a zero balance on it. But if you need it, then you can draw on it as you see fit. A lot of people say to me, especially when they're retired, they say, oh, Chris, I don't want any debt. I don't want any debt, right? I'm retired. I don't want any debt. Well, when you retire, you still want to have access to credit if necessary. And you never, ever, ever want to be put in a compromising situation. So when you're planning your future, it is always, always a good idea to set things up properly so that you have options, right? You have freedom that ensures that your comfort and dignity, and you have security as you age. Okay, so now that we're talking about getting older, let's talk about legacies. All right, before we go into legacies, you all know that you have to have an updated will, and you also have to have two powers of attorney, right? So when I say two powers of attorney, you must have one for assets and one for medical direction. And as you get older, it is a good idea to have your child, if you have children, as a joint account holder on your bank accounts. Because if anything were to happen, you want to, you know, let them have access to pay your bills. All right. So now, of course, when you're planning a legacy, you can give your grandchildren your personal mementos, your photographs, your antiques, or if you're like my mother, her 30 Royal Daltons. or you can give them something that they can actually, like, has real monetary protection, the ability to fund future purchases, not just education, but maybe their own retirement. So I'm talking about participating whole life insurance for children. And who, if you have participating whole life insurance, you're probably thinking, oh, I don't like that idea. But I don't want you to dismiss this, because this is very different when you are buying it for a child. So the premiums are much, much more affordable. If you are used to whole life insurance, you'll know that the premiums are very, very high because there's an investment piece to it. But when you're buying it for a child, they're very, very affordable. And they can often be paid up in 3, 5, 10 years. The policies offer insurance protection with the potential to grow the money tax-free inside the policy over time. This is what's called a CSV, or a cash surrender value. And the premiums are also level. They're guaranteed for life at the time that you purchase the policy. So, for example, if you bought a policy when the child is 2 or 3, just think about that premium. It's like minuscule. It's nothing. The investment piece receives dividends, and the insurance piece also receives spillover dividends, which are added to the investment and allowed to compound year over year. And what does the child have a lot of? Time, right? They got a lot of time for it to compound. Now, I'm going to show you this. This is an actual setup for one of my clients, and I'm going to explain it to you. So we set this up when the child was 5 years old. Here is the contracted premium, $670 per year. Now, cash can be accessed with the funds for education. Remember that this is also a guaranteed asset, so it can be used by the banks as collateral to borrow against, and or it can be simply left to grow over many, many years. These clients, they wanted to buy an RES, or they wanted to get an RESP, so they only had one grandchild. And they were wealthy clients. They wanted to invest $50,000 or $60,000 into an RESP for their one grandchild. And I said, we can do that. That's no problem. But why not consider a participating whole life policy? And when we went through the benefits of it, they agreed. So they wanted a face value of $1 million. So we captured that. This is the premium. And they wanted to invest $60,000 over a 10-year period. You can invest less. You can do $1,000 over 10 years. You could do $2,000, whatever you want. It doesn't matter. But this is the actual CSV. This is the CSV amount, cash surrender value after 30 years. Sorry about this. And this is the life insurance benefit. So they had a life insurance benefit of $1.6 million, and they had a cash surrender value of $290,000 after 30 years when the child was 34. Now, this can be left to grow, but if the child wanted to withdraw this, they could, right? Maybe they want to start a new career. Maybe they want to use this to buy a new home or whatever. What happens is that the participating life insurance, and this was with Great West Life. If any of you know insurance, Great West Life has gobbled up a lot of insurance companies. They now own Canada Life, they own Freedom 55, they own London Life, they own Equitable Life, they own Manulife. They have become a huge powerhouse. They have been giving a dividend since 1860, whatever, and their average dividend return is typically between 4 and 7%. This is good, right? This is why the banks consider a participating whole life policy as an asset, and it can be used to collateralize to borrow against, because they know that you have the cash surrender value, and they know that this is a guaranteed life benefit. Now, the other thing I wanted to tell you was with participating whole life policies, they're actually not that popular in Canada. I don't know why, especially for children. I just don't know why. But I have actually seen policies that have been left to grow. Just imagine how huge this would be if this child left it until they were your age, right? Until they were in their 50s or 60s. We see a lot of this with American clients. They seem to catch on to this, and they have a lot of this for their grandchildren. The bottom line, when you are creating a legacy, you know, especially because I'm a woman, you want to be remembered. You want to be valued, and you want to be thought of in a loving way. When you when your grandchild is 50 or 55 and you're long gone, wouldn't it be fantastic? Just imagine it. If they're sitting across from their advisor or their banker and they're going through their investments and they come across your participating whole life policy and their advisor says, whoa, yeah, that's amazing. You've got $2 million here. And the advisor says, where did you get that from? I got that from my grandparents. Instant legacy. Legacy achieved, right? That's what we want. Everybody has been compromised in the past. And I want to read you this quote that I found that really hit home when I read it by Elizabeth Kubler Ross. The most beautiful people are those who have known defeat, known suffering, known struggle, known loss, and have found their way out of the depths. These persons have an appreciation, a sensitivity, and have an understanding of life that fills them with compassion, gentleness, and a deep, loving concern for others. Beautiful people do not just happen, and they don't. They're made. You can adapt. You can change. You can regain control no matter what stage of your life you are in today. No matter what your age, no matter what has happened in the past, success is demonstrated by how many times you've had to pick yourself up start again and be a better person for it. The quality of your life is based on the way you control your thoughts, your choices, your behaviors. And purpose is a great way to do this, right? To learn from each other. Those retirees that have more hobbies, and I heard that you have lots of hobbies. Someone said that they were going kayaking, they're going biking on that train trail. These are great things. Those people that have more core pursuits are apparently happier than those that retired with only one or two things that they'd like to do outside of their work. A lot of Canadians with no hobbies sometimes end up with depression in retirement, claiming that they had never ever been depressed in retirement. But now without work, they kind of felt like they had lost their identity and their sense of purpose. The number one hobby among happy retirees is volunteering, of which we all know there's endless opportunities and options. The happier retirees are very active and social. They often have a lot of daily exercise, and they've joined clubs, played sports, attended fitness classes. They volunteer. They might have a part-time job, and they're generally busy every single day with activities. Now, according to StatsCan, the unhappier retirees of that study tended to prefer more solitary interests, such as going on a walk on their own. Hunting was another one, which I found interesting because my dad's a hunter, and watching a lot of TV. So, the takeaway, even though you are now retired, is you can't stop planning for your life. You've got to keep planning, even though you're retired. You must remember that your life is what you make it. Only you can make yourself happy, fit, slim, busy, wealthy, content, independent, prosperous. I mean, you get the idea, right? No matter where you are, no matter what is going on right now in your life, you can change it. You can mix it up this year, and you can find your own happiness equation, and you can just do it. And this year, I would love it, if you could challenge your banker or your advisor to give you more. Get them to show you more, and most of all, get more out of your investments so that you can do the things that you want and be happier, right? Thanks for your time today.